This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello and good morning. Welcome to the morning run on BFM 89.9, the business station. 6 o'clock on Tuesday, the 8th of May. I'm Melissa Idris. I've got Kusi Chuang and Joyce Goh here with me. Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. I can feel the election fever hitting a pitch coming up as we are on what they say, the eve of the mother of all elections.
The electricity is in the air. Yeah.
Don't get shocked.
Don't get shocked.
Yeah, stay with us all day today because we're going to be providing you a news and analysis, not just in the morning, but all the way till midnight as we head into polling day tomorrow. We've got commentators joining us on the line for news and analysis. But in this morning, up to 10 o'clock, we're going to take you up to 10 with the breakfast grill, with a look at local markets and what to expect as we head into the polls. But first, a look at what's happening internationally. In the US, First Lady Melania Trump, she's announced a campaign to teach children the importance of social, emotional and physical health. This is all part of her Be Best initiative, she says, to promote healthy living and using social media in positive ways.
I don't know, this sounds a bit weird, right?
Why is it weird?
if you're married to a person who who does what he does, does it ring a bit false that his wife is trying to be
completely honest, she started out when she was on the campaign trail with Trump. She did say that she wanted to focus on cyberbullying in the past, but because of her husband's behavior on Twitter, she's had to dial that back, and now she's focusing on this living positive in children.
And I guess with social media nowadays, with children, they're using it more and more now. And first ladies, they usually have they will champion something. So this is Be Best in this way, I guess. It's Melania Trump's.
Well, yeah, she did come up to the Rose Garden to say this, but whether she will, I don't know. I mean, be able to really carry this as a cause of her own to champion in the very big shoes to fill of Michelle Obama.
I think it's imperative for all first ladies, I guess, in America to take on a cause and to carry it.
First ladies around the world, I think so.
Well, not more so than in America, yeah. I guess. Not wanting to introduce the Malaysian element. But look, I mean, but then the public, you know, the general public have got to take to it and see that it's genuine, right?
Mm. Well, moving on from the US to Russia, we have Vladimir Putin sworn in for the fourth term as the Russian president. Now, apparently there was a huge ceremony that was full of what do you call that? Pomp and circumstance.
Circumstance, yes.
And he has pledged to harness Russia's talents to achieve breakthroughs. Apparently more than 5,000 people attended this very lavish ceremony in a very ornate Kremlin hall.
Yeah, so for another...
No surprises here, right?
Yeah. And, you know, to serve the fatherland. I just don't know whether he'll preside over the introduction of his country to military war, to war, essentially, right? Like, a lot of people are talking about him being the one who's orchestrating conflicts around the world.
Well, what was also disconcerting now is that he has been in power or you know, in some form of power, either as a president or prime minister, for 18 years and 25, if you want to count a little longer with Medvedev. However, there could be a whole generation of, so it seems that there's a whole generation of Russians who have grown up with him in power, right? So they know no other person at the top other than Vladimir Putin.
Sounds familiar.
Yeah. Was it Mahathir in charge for 23?
24. 2 years.
Over 20 years, for sure, yeah. But, well, on Saturday, there were riots in Moscow, right? And I think a number of people were arrested. More than 1,000 people were arrested in 19 cities. So definitely there's unrest there as well. People are unhappy, but looks like not enough.
And we're also looking at that case. I don't know whether you've been following the case of Kim Wall, you know, the murder of the journalist Kim Wall, now Danish inventor Peter Madsen. He was convicted last month of premeditated murder and dismembering her body. But now he's contesting his life sentence for her murder. So essentially he's saying, well, he's not saying he's not guilty. He's just saying, don't give me a life sentence.
Wow. Well, you know, for someone who does this, you know, this dastardly deed on his own submarine,
can negotiate the life sentence some more.
Really?
Yeah,
well, apparently, life-term prisoners serve an average about 16 years. And then maybe after that, they appeal.
Yeah, this is in Danish prisons specifically. Mm.
Well, Bill Cosby's in his 90s. He's going to serve three consecutive terms of 30 years each. So obviously, that's a life sentence for him. He's not going to see the light of day. But this guy, maybe he's 47 years old.
Yeah, so, 47, very young still. Yeah. So we'll see. I mean, if he does serve what is, 16 years, you still come out with some measure of life still after that. Okay, it's coming up to 6 minutes past 6 o'clock. And after this, we're going to be looking at economists and whether the metrics that they use to measure the economy is still relevant in this day and age. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, this is The Morning Run, and you're with me, Melissa Idris, Kusi Chuang and Joyce Goh this morning. It's coming up to 10 minutes past 6 o'clock on Tuesday the 8th of May. Just heard Jumping Jack Flash there by the Rolling Stones. Now, coming up throughout the morning, we've got a range of shows and interviews, including on the Breakfast Grill, Brigadier General Dr. Arshad Raji, President of the National Patriot Association, to talk a little bit about, I guess, the voters' bloc that the Army and former Army make up. Heading into GE14. We also have Kor Yu Ling, independent political economist from Segi Inam Advisors on at 8:30 to talk to us about the Felda voting bloc and the so-called anti-China sentiment from the opposition camp. And speaking about economists, on the BBC World Service today, we will be talking about economists and their efforts to transform the way economics is taught in universities to, I guess, to make it more relevant to the real world. That's on the BBC World Service at 9:30. Which brings us to the question of whether we think economists have a role to play in you know, giving us a sense of how to gauge the way we live in today.
Yeah, look, I mean, you know, just about a couple of weeks ago, I saw a story in the Financial Times asking, or really basically saying that Karl Marx is still very relevant today. Mm-hmm. And you know what,
200th birthday.
200th birthday, right? He wrote a book called Das Kapital all those years ago. It's a 2,000-page, three-tome masterpiece. It's an opus, right? But, you know, the kind of stuff that he wrote about 200 years ago, basically, he predicted that machines would robots would take the place of human beings. He also wrote that social structures, not automation, would also be the centerpiece of the economy. I mean, the kind of stuff that he spoke about 200 years ago is still relevant today.
Did he write really about automation and robots taking over jobs?
Yeah, so I think that if you get it right, if you get it right, you'll still be relevant. And the problem with economics and economists today is they tend to have veered off, and they've gotten too technical, too obtuse, and too complicated. I mean, in recent times, people like Malcolm Gladwell, Tim Harford, the kind of undercover economist, you know, they've been very, very real in their prognosis. But you know, by and large, economists have gone off the whole complex scale.
Do you think it's because the model they use have changed and it's no longer based on realities of today?
Yeah, I think so.
So the people that you have named, they're just a few, it's a handful. Yeah. But majority of them, they still go back to the models, and that could be old school. It may not be based on what is happening.
What kind of models do you reckon, Joyce?
Economic models, like what you're looking at, or the theories that you're looking at, may not be so relevant as it is today, because some people feel like economists focus too little on what people really care about. So they have a price for everything, but they, you know, basically they don't have the value.
Yeah,
value.
So whether the metrics that they use to kind of gauge how we live, whether that's what is reflective of the people, right? So would a GDP measure, for instance, be relevant to you and I? Or would a World Happiness Index measure be more accurate to the way we live,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I think the whole industry, the whole economists, I don't know, is it an industry, is it a profession, is in a state of transition right now. I mean, I want to cite Bridgewater Capital CEO Ray Dalio. He said that basically the whole concept of GDP is antiquated, right? Because even in a small country like Malaysia, there are several economic systems at play. You've got the GLC sector, you've got the whole middle economy where, you know, the Chinese SMEs are, are operating. And then you've got the grey economy where the freelancers and the black market operators and the touts and the bookies are playing in. So there's East, and then there's all immigrant sector, right? Where all
every country is different, isn't it?
Yeah, so and that's just Malaysia.
Yeah,
right?
And there's no one. I think no one size fits all. I studied economics in my undergraduate degree, and I have to tell you, apart from the theory, what I loved about economics was that I could apply it to anything. And, you know, you'd see data or you'd see a theory and you can make it work for you in any kind of argument. It helped you bolster your argument, right? But what I didn't like about economics was that what I found in the field was there weren't very many good communicators. So while they were brilliant men and women, they weren't able to translate what they learned or what they're thinking very well, especially to the layperson.
Do you think the ex-Greek finance minister, Yanis Varoufakis, is a good communicator? Because
yes.
He's an economist.
He's a great storyteller. And I think that's what all good economists have to be. They have to be able to tell a story well, enable for people to understand it.
And
because
simple enough,
that's right. So for me, with economists, the two things that the biggest bugbears I have is the fact that often they're not the best communicators. Secondly, they have hindsight is often 2020, right? So they say, oh, we always knew the 2008 financial crisis was coming. I mean, in hindsight, you can say that, but who can predict when the next crisis is coming, right?
Yeah, but they've also got to grow some teeth, right? Because it's one thing to expound theories in the right columns. It's another to influence policy. And right now, most of the economic metrics that we use are by and large useless. I mean, when you try and capture the whole productivity, the whole output of one country in one number, GDP, it doesn't work, right?
Yeah.
And then you got things like inflation, and everybody knows that official inflation is a fallacy. You talk about unemployment and we say that 2 or 3% unemployment is full employment. That's bollocks, right?
I don't think you can say that.
It's an official one in the Merriam-Webster, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, right? Productivity, how can you measure productivity?
Well, tell us what you think. Do you think there's still a role to be played by economists and whether they are using the right metrics now to as a measure for the way we live? Tell us what you think. You can always join this conversation. Our WhatsApp number is 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. After this, we're going to look at Tony Fernandes and his endorsement of caretaker Prime Minister Dato' Sri Najib Razak. Could that lose Tony some fans? We'll discuss after this. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. Brian Adams, the summer of 69. Good morning. You're with The Morning Run. Melissa, Joyce and Chuang here with you. 6:21 on the clock. And we're looking at what's gone viral overnight. AirAsia's boss, Tony Fernandes, has commended caretaker Prime Minister Najib Dato' Sri Najib Razak for putting the people first, according in his words. Now, he said that the government and the prime ministers put people first and the decision becomes easy. This was done in a video. Now, the question when this went viral really is, is this seen to be an endorsement of Najib Razak? And what was, I guess, Tony's motivations behind this so-called endorsement?
Well, it's clearly orchestrated, right? Because Tony doesn't do anything by halves. He doesn't do it without thinking first. And we all know that he's a bit of a marketing PR man. Mm-hmm. I saw the video and, he talks about how AirAsia went from a 2-aeroplane startup to a 230-plane startup, went from carrying 200,000 passengers to 89 million passengers. Mm. And they said he couldn't do it without the support of the Malaysian government, and who basically peddled AirAsia all over the world along with the GLCs and made it what it is.
Right.
He basically goes on to credit the government of Malaysia for making AirAsia what it is and for making it a global brand name. I thought that was factually correct. I just thought it was a bit strange because he's done it at this point in time. He goes on to say, as a result of the government putting the company first and AirAsia first, people should not listen to fake news, should not vote on hearsay, and should vote for what's best for the country. So clearly this is an endorsement of some sort for the ruling coalition. I just find it weird that he's come out to say this at this point in time, and he's melded business with government at a time. A lot of us are talking about divorcing and separating big business from government, because at the end of the day, for business to thrive, it needs government to be small. He's actually going in the opposite direction.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, the timing of it is pretty...
It's a bit weird.
Yeah, it's everyone's asking, why are you doing this? And if you look at Kataka Prime Minister's social media, he says he's surprised to be collected on a BN-themed Air Asia flight today. Yeah. So you look at the photos, their airplane, there's Hebatkan Negaraku, and if you look at a Malaysia Kini story, it says photographs cited by Malaysia Kini showed the stewardesses were clad in blue uniforms, which is BN's official colour, as opposed to their normal red-coloured uniforms.
Because red is the colour of Bersatu, isn't it?
Right.
So it's not just what he said. It's not just what Tony Fernandez said in the video. It's all these extra things, the photo ops, the livery on the plane, the colour of the stewardess's uniform. So all that, you know, when you take it in a collective, that could be seen as an endorsement?
Absolutely. So
you reckon?
Yeah, absolutely. It's an endorsement. I mean the imagery is so powerful. You don't even need Tony to be there. You just want the airplane to be there.
So the question is this a business decision to do this? I mean, there's no denying that AirAsia could be impacted by high impact rail projects like the HSR. Is this a strategic move on Tony's part to pick what he views is the winning horse?
Well, yeah. I mean, Tony is definitely a PR guy. Everyone knows, as Chong mentioned, he's a marketing guy. He's a corporate man. He wouldn't have done this without thinking strategically. Mm. You know, basically, looking at what he's doing to take photos, to look at what the Hebatkan Negaraku plane to the stewardess's uniform.
When you said that the caretaker prime minister was surprised, are you saying that this was not orchestrated from the BN?
I think that it alone was orchestrated. I don't think he was surprised.
According to his post, he says surprised to be collected on a BN theme Air Asia flight.
Well, that insinuates that, you know, this was Tony's idea to do this and not you know, part of the campaign machinery.
So. Knowing what I know about politicians, I don't think so. But let's flip this on its head, right? Remember when Stanley Tai came out very publicly in the last elections and said he supported the opposition. As a result, his share price tumbled. People, critics flayed him in the press.
This was in GE13,
right? GE13, mm-hmm. Media questioned his loyalty. Well, not questioned, but questioned why he came out. So that's the opposite direction, right? What happens this time? And we know that fund flows have turned in the opposite direction. We know that the KLCI has turned nervous and bearish in the last few days because people are, investors are fearing a Malay tsunami. What happens this time to AirAsia's share price and to the public shareholders? Because it's not Tony's private airline. He's a public company.
Correct.
You know, there's how many million retail investors and shareholders.
But if you were to use the Supermax example, the share prices rallied after that apology. Could we see a duplicate scenario here with AirAsia?
So you're exposing your share price, your company and your fortunes to political avocations, which is, to me, it should not be the same.
But it's not just about share price, right? It's about customers as well. Do you
yes.
think this
Correct.
Is
true?
So do you think Tony could lose popularity or AirAsia could lose popularity with customers?
Looking at the social media comments, potentially people are upset if you read it. There are a lot of people out there saying, how can you do this? So do you think there's value to being apolitical? At the
absolutely.
End of the day, for
absolutely.
Corporates. Yeah, and guys, just a note, AirAsia ended down 0.27% yesterday.
Okay,
the
stock. That's not a big deal.
But the question really is, I mean, say you disagreed with Tony's endorsement of the Prime Minister, would that stop you from booking your next flight on AirAsia? I don't think so.
Remember when Mark Zuckerberg stole 89 million people's data from your profile? Or from
did everyone
profile?
Delete their
Did anybody
Facebook?
Delete profile other than Elon Musk? No.
Good point, Chuan. Good point. All right, we're heading into the 6:30 news with Sabrina Magdalene. And to take you there, we have the Kinks with This Time Tomorrow, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, 6:40 right now. I'm Melissa Idris with Kusu Chuang and Joyce Go. You're listening to The Morning Run. If you've just joined us, welcome. That was Tell Me What's On Your Mind by Alalas. Tell us what's on your mind when it comes to Tony Fernandez. We asked you, could Tony Fernandez's endorsement cause him to lose some AirAsia fans? And according to Vivek V, who tweeted us at BFM Radio, fans are for actors and musicians, he says. Tony is a businessman. Unless Malaysians are willing to pay 500 ringgit more for the same flight just to forgo AirAsia, he won't be losing any sleep.
Well, customer patterns. I mean, look at how Volkswagen suffered through Dieselgate. And did anybody stop buying Volkswagen cars? No. Did many people delete their Facebook accounts after the Cambridge Analytica fiasco? No.
Well, okay, so I would argue that with the Volkswagen, there was a bit of an impact. But with Facebook, I take your
point.
Sales-wise? Well, with Facebook, I take your point, simply because there's no... Facebook has a dominant position in the market, similar to AirAsia, with a dominant position within the low-cost flight market. So unless we have any direct competitor or, you know, a legitimate competitor to that market share, people will still be flying AirAsia flights.
They do. I guess at the end of the day, it's price sensitivity. How price sensitive are customers? You can comment on social media and say, oh, why did you do this, Tony, and blah, blah. But are you going to take a full-fledged, you know, airline or a budget airline if you, you know, at the end of the day, how much are you going to pay for your ticket to travel?
I'm not sure that dominance is there anymore. I mean, when you look at the low-cost space, you've got people like Malindo, you've got people like...
Jetstar.
And Malaysia Airlines, through the restructuring, they're quite affordable nowadays. So.
Well, Henry Wong tweeted in and he says that he reckons there will be a short-term negative impact. And then...
Free flights.
Free seats promo, he reckons. I mean, I'm just wondering, you know, there was a lot of goodwill for Tony after he came back with the, you know, the AirAsia, you know, letting people fly.
Yeah, tickets,
yes, extra flights, and then not charging for changing your flight. So there's a lot of goodwill for him then. And I wonder now whether we'll see that goodwill be reversed after he very publicly endorsed the caretaker prime minister. Tell us what you think. Our WhatsApp number is 018-789-8899. And our Twitter handle is at BFM Radio. We have Gan Tieng Eng who weighed in on WhatsApp. Tony Fernandez is entitled to his democratic rights and should not be slated for endorsing any political party. Everyone is entitled to make a choice.
That's
fair
from
point.
Ramesh. Yeah. That's from Ramesh. That's, yeah, that's true. They're good points. He is entitled to his democratic right. But the thing is, can you paint the whole?
Well, he's demonstrating his loyalties with an aeroplane which doesn't 100% belong to him. It partly belongs to shareholders and the public.
I take your point that everyone is entitled to the democratic right. Maybe, you know, some people want to show their political affiliations, which is fine. But I think we all also have not just a vote at the ballot box, but also a vote in from our pockets, right? If you agree with someone's political views, then you should support that. If you don't, then you should also vote with your feet or your pocket. Or in this case, bums on seats.
Bums on seats,
as they say. Well, let's move on to think tanks across the country, because we've got a lot of analysis and predictions coming out ahead of GE14. We've got the good folks over at the think tank Iman Research now saying that the focus for GE14 really shouldn't be on this so-called Malay tsunami phenomenon. However, it should be on political parties getting the new voters out of their houses and to the ballot boxes.
Yeah, I saw this last night. Actually, there's only about 14 million odd registered voters out of a population of 32. Actually, someone was asking me yesterday, why were there so few? And actually, the mechanism, and people are quite delayed in their reactions. You know, new voters, and I know some outside who have actually registered.
Outside the studio,
who are registered but not eligible to vote. And then there are some who have totally never voted. So I think Iman has got a point, but on the issue of the Malay tsunami, I want to cite some of the research done. You know how when we spoke to some commentators and the Kampung folk and the young Malay voters, they used to live in Kelantan, Terengganu, back home, but they've now moved to big cities to find jobs, Ipoh, KL. These guys are actually from back home, you know, Kelantan, Terengganu, but they've been living in the city and they've been reading all the news, they've been getting all the messages. So I don't know. I'm not sure whether this Malay tsunami is actually fable or fact.
Yeah, but Chong, they've been reading the news and they've been reading the messages, but some of them have changed their address on their ICs to the Klang Valley, and they're not going back to vote in Kelantan or Terengganu. So that's also a pattern there.
Correct.
That's one. Also, with midweek polls, some people are saying that the turnout might be lower. So we're getting mixed reviews on that. Some people are saying because of the midweek weak polls, they are making an effort to go vote. They're making an effort to go back, to go outside.
But just how many, right? Yeah. What's the quantum, whether that can make any significant change?
Yeah, I was actually also told by one of my journalist friends that if the polls had been held on a weekend as per normal, you know, it would have been quite lethargic in terms of turnout. But because it was held in midweek, a lot of people were infuriated by the move by the EC. And as a result, are saying, well, now that you've gone this way, I'm going to come out and vote.
But we can't deny, though, given the shorter campaign period, the shortest that you know that we are allowed to have is the minimum length of a campaign period. It's been a rather subdued environment. If we compare that to elections past, this has been somewhat subdued, would you say?
Yeah, I think this is also what Iman Research is saying. They've noted that the overall atmosphere and environment of this year's election campaigns was more subdued and orderly. And they're saying that this could be due to the formation of new alliances like the Pakatan Harapan Coalition. That's one.
Yeah, because you've broken it up, right?
You see,
yeah.
if I was a politician in one of the, you know, one of the groupings, I'd be actually quite worried, because at least when things are disorderly and they're noisy and they're rambunctious, you can kind of get a feel.
Right.
But when things are, you know how when you have kids, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the kids are like making tons of noise outside. You know they're alive and well and
healthy. When they're quiet,
when they're quiet, you're wondering what is going on, what they're doing, right? And that's the thing. I think a lot of the conversations have gone into the dark, into the, what I call the dark web, right? The WhatsApp conversations, the WeChat conversations. Mm. Back in the day, it used to be the BlackBerry, right? You know,
BlackBerry Messenger.
Do you remember,
right?
Nobody could track those,
back
right?
Back in the day.
Okay. Some people estimate that as much as 30% of the internet is on this dark web.
And that's a very valid point. When things are too quiet, you really wonder,
right,
what's the quiet majority, the silent majority, what are they saying? Well, if you have an inkling, tell us. Our Twitter handle is at BFM Radio. Again, our WhatsApp number is 018-789-8899. After this, we're going to be talking about the battle for viewership, two competing addresses on the eve of polling tonight. Tell us, we'll be discussing after this. Stay tuned right here with The Morning Run, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, people get ready by the impressions. It's coming up to 6:52 right now. You're with The Morning Run. I'm Melissa Idris with Joyce Goh and Kusu Chuang this morning. We're going to take you all the way to 10 a.m. if you want to get in touch with us. We're on Twitter at BFM Radio and on WhatsApp at 018-789-8899. We've got lots of people weighing in on the issue of Tony Fernandez's endorsement of caretaker Prime Minister Dato' Sri Najib Razak, saying that Carl Chin is saying that he believes it's a difficult decision, but any move is for the best interest of AirAsia shareholders, specifically AirAsia shareholders. There you go. What do you think about that?
Glass half full approach. I'd like that. You know, optimism better than pessimism.
Well, I think he's going off the Stanley Tai Supermax case, perhaps.
Yeah.
You know, we're seeing that. Aslan Zakaria says support for politicians can be a double-edged sword. Best to do it below the radar.
Best tweet so far, in my opinion.
that's a really nice wordplay there, below the radar for Air Asia. And Roland Tan has weighed in as well this morning. It's the lull before the storm. It's I think so too. I think we're kind of all building up to that electricity of tomorrow for polling day. And in the lead up to that, we've got the issue of the postal vote. We've got the issue of the battle of for viewership. Now, if you haven't heard yet, we've got two competing addresses tonight. Everyone's really focusing on making sure they put in their last ditch efforts for campaigning before the midnight curtain drops.
Yeah, exactly. When I look at the internet, basically both leaders of both groupings will be out. And basically the one of them, the Prime Minister, the caretaker Prime Minister, will be on TV3. The Tun Mahathir, the good doctor, will be on the internet, Facebook, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And
you've got Uber TV, if I'm
not
mistaken.
Uber TV, yeah. So you've got to ask yourself, which is the more effective platform today in this day and age?
Well, I think Dato' Sri Najib Tun Razak, he's looking at TV3, TV2, Astro Awani, Bernama TV. So basically the TV platform. And Tun Mahathir is looking at online. He's going online. And everyone's going to be looking at what they're going to be talking about. Basically, I guess, topics like relatable topics, GST,
cost of living.
Yeah. Well, let's look at the platform first, right? Before we go into the content and what to expect. It's likely that that is perhaps the only avenue for Dr. Mahathir to make his speech public. I've seen comments on social media saying, "Oh, I hope that they put this on YouTube as a live stream because YouTube you can kind of." Put it on your TV and then the whole family can watch as opposed to perhaps just watching it on a smaller screen. This is really interesting because it speaks to the target demographic, right? Who are they targeting each with this speech? And I wonder whether viewership will necessarily translate into votes. Could be people are just curious to know what one side says over the other.
Well, one speech over another will really talk to the fence sitters, right? The probables and the convertibles, right? At the end of the day, because if
convertibles by now, like the car,
yeah. Well, the fence. So if you haven't really made up your mind by now, then you would probably be one of the ones to tune in, right? But I think my gut feel is by and large, most people by now will already have a good sense of how they're going to vote, right?
Yeah. Do you think they'll be preaching to the converted? People who are tuning in, you don't think so? People who are tuning in have already made up their minds already. You're just going to kepo and listen to see what they have to say.
I think everyone will be tuning in, but a question is which channel will you be tuning into? And I have to say, given that both of them are going to be on air at the same time, why not have a debate? That would have been so wonderful.
Actually, it would be.
It would be
that
so
would
great.
Be great. Yeah.
You're having an address at the same time and you're splitting the audience.
Yeah, yeah.
Why not consolidate
Fantastic
everything?
Fantastic idea. Why don't we call up the Prime Minister's press secretary?
Just give me a sec. Let me make that call. He's on speed dial.
Mentor versus protege. Opponent versus incumbent, right?
Yeah.
Et cetera, et cetera.
I think it's quite interesting. But also, there will be other, I guess... factors that will distract as we lead into polling day. We've also got a couple concerts, not the Bruno Mars concert. That's not.
Is he still having?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Tomorrow I had to sell my ticket.
However, there's also the concert in Langkawi with artists coming on board. And this is, again, interesting because it's in Langkawi. You've got this lineup of artists having a concert at the same time. We've got two leaders of the country giving an address.
Yeah, timing of this concert.
Everyone wants your eyeballs.
Romney Sarip, but isn't he from a bygone era? DJ Dave, Dayang, Norfazi, okay, they're a bit newer.
Well, Joe Flizzo,
So catering for the older and the younger generation. Yeah. So maybe if you don't want to have, say some of the oldies but goodies, you can go for some of the newer tunes. But I'm wondering whether this, concert in Langkawi really is a way to steal eyeballs away from what is going to be the battleground for Tun Dr. Mahathir.
That's true. And if you look at the comments, a lot of them are saying, we just want to wait for the lucky draw. Everyone's just eyeing the lucky draw.
You can win motorcycle, you can win smartphone, you can win PlayStation sets.
Exactly, right?
It's a Kinchan, 25,000 ringgit.
But the good thing is with technology, you can use your handphone, you bring it there, you bring your earplugs, and you can still tune in to whichever you want to watch.
How a Penang person would do it. You can have your cake and eat it as well.
Bring the egg to the kopitiam. That's right.
I'm curious to know, tell us what you'll be doing tonight at 10 p.m. Who will you be watching? And what factors will determine a win for either side? Is it going to be viewership? Is it going to be the merits of what they say in their speeches? Really, it's all about content, isn't it?
Yes. What are topics that they're saying promises. But please remember, they can promise a lot of things. I guess what is key is execution and, whether or not they keep to their promise. Mm. We have to remember that. Don't have short memories.
There's only two kinds of promises. The ones that you keep and the ones that you don't keep.
That was profound, Kasichong. Profound ahead of elections.
Sorry.
I have to say. But okay, again, so the push is until midnight. Now, if you somehow find yourself unable to watch any of the speeches, you can always tune in to BFM because we will be giving you live coverage and analysis of both speeches.
You can listen to it on the app. So again, mobile phone. You can still go to the concert, your wife can have her mobile phone on
watching
the screen, and you can also tune in to BFM through the app on your mobile phone.
My dear Penang colleague, Joyce Goh.
Actually, we're all from Penang in the studio today.
Right, today.
Quite
I thought about it, I didn't say it. She evoked radicalized it.
Well, tell us what you think. We'd love to hear from you. Again, join the conversation on Twitter at BFM Radio or on WhatsApp at 018-789-8899. We've got the 7 o'clock news bulletin coming up next with Sabrina Magdalene. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. Good morning. You're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Melissa Idris with Joyce Goh and Kusu Chuang. 7 minutes past 7 o'clock on Tuesday, the 8th of May. Now, we're coming up this hour. We're going to look at the front pages of the newspapers and what's trending online, as well as some of the biggest news stories ahead of GE14 tomorrow. Now, taking a look at some of the responses on Twitter, we were talking about the battle for viewership with the competing addresses of caretaker Prime Minister Najib Razak and to Dr. Mahathir at 10 p.m. tonight. We've got Dr. Fu weighing in saying viewership won't affect the final outcome. The caretaker party still controls the rural votes, and how will the rural votes be getting Facebook Live?
Well, you don't know. I mean, smartphones nowadays, they have data, right? And I mean, what is that? Facebook has got 11.5
yeah,
million.
Yeah, I think it's safe to say that there is some level of internet penetration as well.
In terms of
right?
subscribers, yeah.
Definitely.
I mean, Facebook has got a huge number in Malaysia.
If I'm not mistaken, Malaysians have one of the highest Facebook users. I remember reading that
Malaysians?
Somewhere. Yeah, Malaysians.
That sounds about right. We have the most number of Facebook friends as well, if I'm not mistaken.
Really?
Yeah.
No kidding.
Compared to the world, we are higher than
Facebook.
The global average. All right, well, tell us what you think. We're going to be talking about this throughout the morning. In fact, we're going to be taking it all the way till midnight tonight. If you find yourself unable to watch any of the addresses or not at the Bruno Mars concert tonight, you can listen to BFM and tune in for commentary and analysis.
Bruno Mars concert is tomorrow. It's
tomorrow, if I'm not
tonight.
Mistaken.
Yeah.
It's tomorrow.
Or you could just tune in through your mobile.
Yeah,
mobile phone.
Exactly, wherever you are.
That's right.
All right, well, let's take a look at what has been, I guess, kerfuffle overseas when it comes to overseas voters not yet to receive their ballots. Now, the Election Commission Chairman, Tan Sri Muhammad Hashim Abdullah, he's assured overseas voters that the ballot papers would reach them and be able to be returned to their returning officers before 5 p.m. on the 9th of May. However, many have taken to social media to complain that they're not receiving their ballot papers or not receiving it or receiving it too late to be returned. So we spoke to Yap Swee Singh, Executive Director of Bursae, with polling day tomorrow. We asked Swee Singh if there are any reports of ballot papers yet to be received.
Yes, there have been many. And this is not only the overseas postal workers, but also domestic one. So many have also posted on their Facebook, mentioning that they have not received their ballot papers. And some have actually contacted the courier service company in their respective cities. And some were actually informed by the courier service through SMS that their ballot paper would only receive on May 8th, which is one day before polling day. This is a case in UK, and another person actually will only receive the ballot papers on the 10th. That's the situation now, and many have not received yet.
We then asked Swee Singh if he expects that many postal votes will be lost this election due to the late delivery of the ballot papers.
Yes. I think there probably would be quite many, although we don't really know. We will probably only know by the time of counting votes, actually how many votes actually returned to the Election Commission. I think the problem lies with the short campaign period. 11 days, it is the minimum that is allowed under the law, and I think Election Commission should take into consideration of these ballot papers needs to be sent out to so many different countries in the world where Malaysians are living or working. To avoid the problems that we are facing now, the Election Commission should have set a longer period of election campaign. Then these problems would have been avoided.
And finally, we ask, we're saying if voters can take any legal action if they're denied their right to vote.
Of course, I think the overseas voters could consider legal actions against the election commission, because this is the right of the citizens. And it is an important right, because you're only given the chance of selecting the government that you wish once every 5 years. And it is very important constitutional rights in the constitution as a citizen. So I think certainly for the overseas voters, they could take legal action to sue the election commission. And this is also a reflection of the unprofessional and incompetence of the election commission in managing our election, because it is such an important occasion and event for the future of the country. And the election cannot be messed up in this way. It is totally unacceptable.
That was Yap Swee Sing, the executive director, Bersih, with his thoughts on the late delivery of the ballot papers for overseas voters for GE14. Now, on the back of that, guys, we've really seen the caretaker deputy home minister, Dato' Sri Nor Jazlan, coming out with a tweet to brush aside comments about these complaints. Now, he's saying that the number of Malaysians voting overseas is less than 0.1% of the population. It won't change any results, he claims. Don't get excited over it.
I was actually quite interested, because it didn't occur to me that actually voting is a constitutional right. And if you don't get your right to vote, and this is a monumental event, right? Mm. You are allowed, and I think you have the locus standi, I think is the legal term, to institute legal action.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, a friend of mine who's in the UK, she's so upset that her vote, basically she could lose her vote. So she got the ballot paper late. Mm-hmm. And then she, because Monday is a public holiday there.
It's a bank holiday.
Yeah, so
we're
talking about that. And in the end, she found someone who could bring her vote back. But she was saying that this is my right. I don't understand why I cannot exercise my right. Mm. Yeah.
So I've seen that on Twitter as well, people offering to say, look, we're flying back, you know, we'll carry your ballots home for you and hand it over to the returning officer. And I believe Bersih was showing or was giving them guidelines on how to go about doing this the right way so that the ballots would still be considered valid. What I think personally, for me, the tweet and the EC's comments in response to this, the frustration is stemming from the dismissiveness of the EC and Nor Jazlan. Yeah, it can be 0.1%, but to be dismissive of it, to say, well, your vote actually doesn't really count. You know,
yeah,
that tweet
right?
really tells overseas voters that, don't worry, your vote as a citizen of Malaysia doesn't really count because, you know, you're 0.1%. That dismissiveness, I think, is infuriating to voters alike.
Yeah, right. And it's as if they don't care, right?
Yeah, well,
exactly
precisely that. And with the EC, I think with the EC as watchdog of these elections, making it so difficult for people to vote also increases the frustration, because
clearly,
it's like, this is our right. We want to do it, but you're making it difficult for us. Why are you making it
exactly.
so difficult?
It's like so
That's
many obstacles, right? It's like the Japan show game again, Melissa.
I love thinking about that yeah. Japanese game show where people jump through hurdles, because I feel like sometimes I'm on a Japanese game show to jump hurdles to cast my vote. There you go. All right. Well, we'll be coming back with a look at the front pages of today's papers shortly. So make sure you stick with The Morning Run right here on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.